High resolution color graphics.
This land of high technology.
The revolution in technology that made the information age possible.
Those kids are not afraid of computers.
Welcome to This Week in Retro for the week of August 31st. Coming up on today's show,
gaming's biggest urban legend comes to life.
A new Game Boy cartridge has been announced.
Turrican blasts back to the modern consoles.
The C64 is finally in the United States.
And Final Fantasy Legend gets a new limited edition. All this and more coming up on This Week in Retro.
Up-to-date news
for out-of-date tech.
Neil, Polybius, the Loch Ness Monster of arcade games, is getting a physical release for the first time. UK-based Numbskull Designs is kickstarting a new campaign to produce a quarter-scale artist rendition of what that infamous, mind-bending game from the 80s might have looked like. This will be yet another addition to the lineup of quarter-scale arcade machines produced by Numbskull, which already includes Bubble Bobble, Space Invaders, Dig Dug, and Track and Field.
So, John, Polybius is urban myth, isn't it? For those of us who don't know what it is, can you just explain exactly what Polybius is?
Polybius is the name of an arcade machine that was supposedly released in 1981 in Portland, Oregon, as part of a government-funded psychology experiment. According to the stories, playing the game resulted in headaches, hallucinations, and interviews with men in black who silently watch players from a distance. However, there's no evidence that this ever actually occurred, but it makes for a great story.
It's all very X-Files, isn't it?
It is.
What about the gameplay? Has anyone ever described what the gameplay of this game is like?
Well, nobody's really sure because I'm pretty sure nobody's ever actually played it. The stories seem to have originated from somewhere in the mid-90s on a Usenet group, much like all great urban legends. But in terms of the new Polybius game, this is the first Numbskull arcade cab that won't include a playable game. According to the Kickstarter page, turning the machine on will display eerie sounds and effects that supposedly induce those mind-altering states in its players, but there is no playable game here. Neil, what do you think of these scaled-down versions of arcade games? Have you had any experience with them?
Yes, I've had experience with Numbskull arcade machines themselves, so exactly the same people who are making this. I've got the Pac-Man cabinet here. It's a nicely made thing. There's a really great attention to detail in its finish, and it does play a good game of Pac-Man. I'd go so far as to say arcade perfect. But it's important to understand that these are part display item and part gaming device, or in the case of Polybius, they haven't even included a game in it. A large part of the appeal is to collect them and have them all on display with the attract sounds going, to create your own miniature arcade, I guess, so you could close your eyes and pretend that you're actually back there in the 80s with surrounded by arcades. I guess you can think of them a bit like the China dolls that your grandma used to collect and put on a display in a cabinet. Now, there has been talk of a Track and Field quarter-scale arcade by Numbskull, which I think would be the ultimate test for how well these cabinets are or aren't built. But what strikes me as odd with this one, with Polybius, is that it's an arcade game that didn't actually exist. Either that or we've all had our memories erased if we played it. So the big question is, unlike Pac-Man or Galaxian or Track and Field, is there actually a demand commercially for a game which nobody has any nostalgia for?
Well, that is the question. To me, this would have been much more attractive if they would have created a playable game instead of a demo. They could have made it a huge part of their sales pitch, too. You know, play the legend for the first time. They could have even partnered with Jeff Minter. You know, he created a Polybius game for the PS4 that actually was released a couple years ago. I don't think I'll be interested in one of these, though. I love the Polybius story, but to me, having what is essentially an artist rendition of a machine that never came out with an unplayable game just isn't a winning proposition. But right now, I've looked at their Kickstarter page and they've raised over $35,000 of its $60,000 goal. So they're halfway there. They've got about 20 days left. And if you pay the £99 to add this to your mini arcade collection, please let us know because maybe this is a lot cooler than I think. Thanks to Paul, aka Hermsky, for sharing the story on our subreddit.
A new physical Game Boy game is coming, and it's called Where Is My Body? Dana Puch, I think I'm pronouncing that right, has raised over £24,000 on Indiegogo and a further €24,000 on Kickstarter to create a new game for the Game Boy. Dana has already released four other games, so we can be confident that this will actually be seen through to completion. And a demo reel on the Indiegogo page shows an already very complete looking game in which you play a severed hand. It's a little hand with a bone sticking out of the top of it, and you walk around like, I guess, like Thing from the Addams Family in a quest to find your missing body. Dana describes it as being in the style of Maniac Mansion, and I have to say that the graphics look wonderful. It's on the original Game Boy, so no fancy colour here. But from what I can see of the demo roll, I would disagree with it being like Maniac Mansion in its style. My impression is more that it looks a bit more like a lock and key style game. It looks to me like Dizzy, but with a severed hand instead of an egg. What are your thoughts on it, John? Have you seen the trailer?
I think it looks good. Games with limited scrolling and static backgrounds suit the Game Boy screen well. The Game Boy does not handle scrolling. It's sort of a pea soupy mess coming back to it in 2020. But I really enjoyed Maniac Mansion and point-and-click adventure games in general. And I'm a pretty big fan of Dizzy. I wouldn't say I'm the largest fan in the world, but I think that there is value in that sort of archetype. However, I think that the severed hand, going with a severed hand as a main character, is a mistake. Your severed hand works well as a bit player, like you said, like Thing in the Addams Family. But as a main character, it's hard to fathom how you can wring any character development out of a single hand. Neil, how much does this thing go for?
It's listed as €35 for the cartridge or €80 for a boxed edition, which is numbered and signed, which is quite a leap in price, really. I dare say a €45 option in the middle would have been nice for just a box to go with it, whether it's numbered and signed or not. But maybe in time that will appear. So although crowdfunding has ended, you can still pre-order the game. If you check today's show notes, you'll find links for this and everything else that we discuss in the show today.
Classic run-and-gun blaster Turrican is making a comeback. More than 30 years after the launch of the original Turrican on the C64, Strictly Limited Games and Factor 5 are teaming up to bring Turrican back to life. These games are being sold strictly in physical format for the PS4 and Switch, and come with in a somewhat confusing array of editions and price points. The first two Amiga titles, as well as Super Turrican, are available in the first anthology, but if you want Turrican 3 and Mega Turrican for the Mega Drive, you'll need to spring for Anthology 2. In the spirit of gaming in 2020, a collector's and ultra collector's edition are available with a plethora of trinkets, art books, and a bunch of other junk at higher price points. Neil, were you a fan of the original Turrican back in the day?
You're selling it to me there with a bunch of other junk. I was a fan. I came later in the series with Turrican 2. It's alleged that I had multiple pirated copies of that game. And it was one of those games where I found it tough, but it did keep me coming back to play, largely because of that Chris Hulsbeck soundtrack. And the game mechanics just felt really cool, how you could spin that gun around and leap from platform to platform. I should point out, though, that Amiga Format, which was a huge magazine for us Amiga fans back in the day, wasn't completely on board. They rated Turrican 2 as 80%. I've got the magazine here, citing that it wasn't a big enough change from the original Turrican. So they were already getting a little bit tired of the format. So by that logic, Amiga Format would absolutely hate the series being re-released 30 years later. I, on the other hand, applaud it. It's a game that should definitely be celebrated, I think.
Maybe I came to the series too late, but I have a hard time finding the fun in Turrican. I find it to be way too difficult, and the level design is really confusing. However, I love the fact that you can spray your gun in all directions. That is really cool and a really unique mechanic. When it comes to run-and-gun games, I'd rather have a go with Rough and Tumble on the Amiga or Contra on the consoles. I'm fully convinced that most of Turrican's success in Europe comes from the somewhat inane decision to name the competition Probotector. Anyway, Neil, what do you think of these price points? Each volume of the anthology is €35, and the collector's edition is €100, and the ultra collector's edition is double that. Do you think adding cheap trinkets and other feelies to games that are already 30 years old make an attractive value proposition?
Yeah, so as you've explained, there's two volumes at €35 each, and the games in the series are split across those volumes, making it €70 for the full set of games, which feels a little bit on the steep side considering they haven't actually introduced anything new here, just packaged up the games nicely and bundled them with emulators to run on the PS4 or the Switch. At that price, I think it will satisfy us oldies, but it doesn't make for an impulse buy that will introduce the series to a whole new generation of gamers, and that worries me a little bit. the €199 Super Ultra Mega Collection is definitely well out of that price bracket. That includes four Amiga coffee cup coasters, an enamel pin, a sticker sheet, a Turrican, you described it earlier as crap and you were bang on. There's a huge list of feelies that's included in there, but I would give them all up in a heartbeat for a new game in the series. My coffee table can suffer some mug rings if that's what it takes to get a new Turrican. So I'd like to have seen them all on one disc for €35 and not split over two, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see them in the near future available digitally and hopefully at pocket money prices, even if it's down to the individual games for £2 or $3 each to attract that impulse buy audience.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'd love to see these available, you know, individually for digital distribution at some point in the future on the PS4 store, the Switch store, whatever. But anyway, regardless of what we think, the Turrican Ultra Collector's Edition for PS4 is already sold out. So there is a market out there for this sort of product. You can see more details about the bundles and pricing at the link in the show notes. Thanks to Amigos Gaming for suggesting this story on our subreddit.
The C64 is finally coming to the USA. The C64 will be familiar to many listeners. It's a full-sized replica of the Breadbin-style Commodore 64, inside which is an emulator, HDMI video out, and USB ports from which you can load games from a USB memory stick. It's got a really nice built-in carousel-style menu to browse the 64 pre-installed games. And aside from some niggles with the original joystick snapping for some users, it was very well received here in Europe and offered a good amount of entertainment for the price. And key to me was the fact that you didn't need to hack it in any way to load your own ROMs from a memory stick, so nobody needed to risk bricking their machine to enjoy the entire C64 library. It appeared in Europe in late 2019, and it's finally getting that North America launch. It's now available for pre-order at $129.99, including a joystick which is in the style of a competition pro stick, and it's due to launch on the 5th of November. John, is this something that you'll be adding to your collection?
Although I already have a killer C64 setup with a PAL machine and an SDIEC card emulating a drive, I totally support this project on principle. And I would love to see the equivalent of an Amiga 600 in the same form factor with an HDMI output, a full-size keyboard, and a selection of classic games. So while I won't be picking up the C64 Mini, I'm hopeful that the next Commodore computer that rolled off the production line will get the similar treatment. The question that always comes up with these kinds of releases is, what does it offer that a Raspberry Pi doesn't?
And it's always a valid question. It's such is the flexibility of the Pi and the low price of it. I'd say it offers two things here. Firstly, of course, is that full-sized case with the working keyboard. It can't have been cheap to make the moldings to produce it. And to type on it, it feels okay. It's a little bit plasticky, the whole unit, and the keys feel a bit spongy. But actually, if you put it next to a real C64 comparison, guess what? A real C64 is kind of plasticky and the keys are kind of spongy. So I actually think that they got this feel quite authentic. And in turn, you quickly forget that it's not the real thing, which has got to be worth something, that illusion that you're using the real device. Secondly, it's for the masses. It's very easy to use. There's none of the configuration challenges to tackle, as you might do with a Pi. You just switch it on and go. So for the casual gamer who wants to relive their youth, it's a good off-the-shelf package to just plug in and go. So personally, I think the $129 price point is pretty fair for what it is. How about you?
The price is right, but why wasn't this available from the beginning in the United States? A big part of every new retro release is experiencing it simultaneously with the retro community. You see this with the Spectrum Next, the Vampire, and any number of things. It seems like the retro community got really excited when these were released, and a bunch of US C64 fans were pretty bummed out when they were left out of the initial release. I don't know if that will play into the sales numbers or not, but at $130, the price is definitely fair.
Oh, John, how the tables have turned. You do not understand the frustration we went through in the 80s and 90s, watching everything come out in America and Japan first and having to wait here. So I'm just going to relish this moment. If you're interested in pre-ordering the C64, check the show notes and also take a look at the thousands of YouTube reviews that are out there for this device from European owners, and you'll quickly get a feel for whether or not this thing is for you.
If you were a JRPG fan in the early 90s like I was, the prospect of taking a Final Fantasy or Dragon Warrior game on the go was something I couldn't pass up. I remember saving my pennies for months to be able to buy what was released in the States as Final Fantasy Legend 2. Lying in between the releases of Final Fantasy for the NES and Final Fantasy 2 on the Super Nintendo, I felt like I was playing a next-generation game on a handheld, a feat not often repeated on the humble Game Boy. It wasn't until many years later that I discovered that the games released in the Final Fantasy Legend series weren't Final Fantasy games at all, but a totally different series called Saga. It was Super Mario Bros. 2 all over again, Neil. At any rate, the Saga series had a tremendous fan base in both its native Japan and abroad, and during the most recent Nintendo Direct, Square Enix announced a package called Collection of Saga Final Fantasy Legend, celebrating the 30th anniversary of the franchise. Speaking of trinkets and whatnot, $150 gets you a download code for the first three Game Boy games, a Saga series metal set, a soundtrack album, and a 600-page Saga series novel compilation. And when I say metal set, I'm not talking about precious metals. I'm talking about what are probably the cheapest metallic medallions you can think of in a like coin collector case. I don't get the metal set as a collectible, but hey, if that's your thing, go for it. One thing that this thing doesn't include are any physical copies of the game. So if you're looking for new editions of the Final Fantasy Legend series to play in your original Game Boy, you are out of luck. Neil, did you play any JRPGs on the original Game Boy?
Just to pause for a moment. You don't even get the physical game in this box.
No, you get everything that you don't want and nothing you do. It's an amazing deal.
Is this becoming more common? Are we just in a period where more and more of these... I don't know. A company's just catching on that they can make money.
I have become more and more convinced that people are obsessed in the retro community with the idea of certain games more than the games themselves. And if they can receive anything in the post that conjures up the same feelings that they had when they originally played the game, whether they're actually sticking the game in their console or computer is irrelevant. That's my personal take.
I think that's a fair point, yes. Give me a box of feelings. Let me enjoy the moment of opening up and digging through what's in there,
right,
and reliving, yeah, how I felt 20 years ago. Yeah, it's a big draw, that emotional draw. I can see why people part with their money. Anyway, back to your original question. Did I play JRPGs on the original Game Boy? I was on the other side of the fence. I was a huge Ultima fan. I was more into the American RPGs, ARPGs, and also loved dungeon crawlers like Eye of the Beholder and Dungeon Master on any micros. Something about the JRPGs didn't grab me in the same way. I think I liked the gritty realism of Western RPGs over the sometimes quite bizarre imaginings of the Japanese creations. But I did later get into Final Fantasy when they finally came out on the PC and started to understand why people loved them so much. On the Game Boy specifically, no, I didn't have a Game Boy back in the day, so I didn't spend a lot of time exploring the JRPG library on it. But it's something I'm trying to get up to speed to since I recently refurbed a Game Boy. So hopefully I'll make some discoveries in that genre.
Yeah, I can't oversell the excitement that I had with getting a JRPG on the Game Boy, because that meant that I could literally walk around and level up my characters while I was, you know, in the backseat of the car or waiting, you know, in the department store for my mom. Being able to take that sort of experience on the go was amazing to me. So that is, it's definitely my number one portable memory of all time. But this collection, it doesn't do anything for me. I am of the opposite ilk where, you know, give me the original box, give me a reproduction of the game. And I think that you're going to you touch on this maybe a little bit later when I ask you, what game series do you think deserves this special treatment?
Yeah, you know my feelings on this. As I mentioned earlier with Turrican, I'd give up all of the trinkets for a new version of a game I love. But failing that, I'd actually be happier with a re-release of a classic game, let's say Prince of Persia. If you recall, that particular game came in a very strangely shaped box, which was gold and purple and saw the prince leaping over the spikes. I'd love to see games like that re-released in its identical original packaging for the classic platform. Give me the IBM PC floppy disks in that box. And the only difference I want to see from the original being that it just says in small print, this is a reproduction. So if I could see games like Doom or Duke Nukem or Alone in the Dark, or imagine if Sierra re-released their adventure games and started getting those glorious big boxes with all of the manuals and the maps that came in them, not dog tags and cheap metal trinkets, but all of that original stuff that we got with the games to actually play the game. You needed those maps and those manuals to play these games. Give me the original Police Quest in the big box, and I would love to put that on my shelf. I would buy those for sure.
Do you have an all-time favorite Feely, Neil?
It's probably the cloth maps of Ultima, because they were feelies that you could put up on your wall and enjoy, but they were also functional. You needed them to play the game. And those maps were all written using a runic language, so you had to learn the alphabet to be able to read them. So you felt clever. You felt like you were in on the secret to be able to look at this thing and translate it and then use it to play the game. I love that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think maps of any kind, anything that you can spread out on a tabletop and really feel like you are the adventurer, that goes a long way towards immersing yourself in a game. There's no word on whether this collection will be making it to Europe or the United States, but if you'd like to gaze at all the Feelies in their majesty, just click on the link from Nintendo Life in the show notes.
So thank you for listening to This Week in Retro. Today's episode of This Week in Retro comes thanks to our partners at Anchor FM. Whether you're new to the game or you have an existing successful podcast, Anchor FM offer a home where you can extend your audience and find new sponsorship opportunities to make it the most successful podcast it can be.
That's right, Neil. We love Anchor, and that's why we use them to host This Week in Retro. You should check them out at anchor.fm for more info.
Join our show subreddit and contribute your favorite stories from the world of retro.
Help us spread the word about the show by leaving us a review on your podcast app of choice, sharing our Facebook page, or just telling a retro-loving friend. See you next week for more up-to-date news
for out-of-date tech. Available next week, the This Week in Retro Collector's Box featuring crumbs from John's breakfast. Old magazines that I've got bored of.
Pre-order now for $129.99.